Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com.
Welcome to Hour 2 of Live the Promise. I don't know how Susie does this every day, back-to-back hours. She is amazing, and we all know that, and we love Susie. Bill Arnold sitting in for her today. You may hear me on weekends. If you tune in, Sundays at 5, I host a show called Real Recovery with George Fraser. We talk about addictions of all kinds. And so I'm delighted to be able to sit in for Susie today. She's out making people happy, which she does 7 days a week. And we had a great first hour. We had Eric Bargerhoff on. I hope every time I say that name, I say it well, and I say it correctly. But he's, if you missed that hour, you definitely want to pick that up. He wrote a book called The Most Misunderstood. Let me see if I get this right. Let's see. The Most Misused Verses in the Bible. Surprising Ways God's Word is Misunderstood. And today, we've got, this hour, we've got a book written by Bill Farrell. It's called The 10 Best Decisions a Man Can Make. And that's going to be a fascinating conversation. So let me tell you about our guests, and let's get started. Bill is an author, a speaker, and co-founder and co-director of LoveWise, an organization to help people connect love and wisdom and bring practical insights to their personal relationships. Bill and his wife, Pam, have written more than 30 books, including Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti, and Red Hot Monogamy. You can find them online at lovewise.com. There's a little dash between loveandwise.com, and their influencer page is at myfaithradio.com. Bill, I know you're a regular to the show. Welcome back.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to be on. It's good to be on with another guy with a great name.
I know. We're in sync today, aren't we, brother?
We are.
Yeah, we're a bond of brothers today. You know, Susie is always crazy about getting the guests on to talk about Scripture right off the bat. So in the spirit of Live the Promise, please share with our listening audience a passage of Scripture that you like that's been speaking to you lately.
Well, I will share with the audience the passage I just chose as my verse for the year.
Okay.
It's Psalm 34, verses 9 through 10. And it says, "Fear the Lord, you his holy people, for those who fear him lack nothing. The lions may grow weak and hungry, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing." And my theme for this year is to just keep it simple.
Love it.
To stay focused on the most important things first and trust God to work out the rest.
Okay. That is powerful stuff. I love that. I want to start with a little quote from the book. And I didn't get a chance to read it all, so I do have some cheat notes here. And it says, "I have been intently watching men make decisions. Some of these decisions have led to growing businesses, strong families, and solid lives. Other decisions have been self-destructive. The majority of the decisions, however, have been attempts to stay ahead of the challenges of life." I followed that line up to that point.
Okay.
Yeah. So talk about what you mean by the last line. "The majority of the decisions, however, have been attempts to stay ahead of the challenges of life." I don't know what that means.
Well, as the average man runs through his life, responsibilities come flying at him. People's expectations come flying at him. Financial responsibilities come flying at him. People ask him questions. People want his advice. And so he gets thrust into a situation where he has to make decisions. And this started to become important to me when I was working with teenagers. I know you and I both had early experiences working in youth ministry. And I came across a study that said most teenagers will go to their dads to try to figure out decisions in their life. And I got to thinking, wow, whether men want to or not, people are going to come to them and expect that they know what they're doing when it comes to the decisions of life.
You know, Bill, one of the several therapists I've seen, and certainly not that I've needed one, just to clear the record, I want to make that perfectly clear, I have not needed one. But the first one I spoke to...
Because you're a man,
oh, yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah. The first one I spoke to said that boys learn how to make decisions from their father between the ages of 2 and 7.
Yeah. Yeah. Being a man just comes prepackaged with this influence in the area of decision making.
Okay.
And men sense it. They may not know what's going on, but they sense it. And men like to succeed. So when they get confronted with these challenges, they decide to do something. And whether it's I'm doing this to relieve stress, I'm doing this to address this drive and desire that's running in my life, whether it's to get the admiration of a female in their life, or whether it's to get the approval of their kids, or maybe the approval of their own dad. Like, men just sense I'm supposed to do something.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's very interesting. A study came out last year from guys who were looking at the Head Start program to see if it was doing any good for people.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that came out of it is that there's a whole lot of young men right now in America who are dads who didn't have dads in their life. But they're hanging around their kids' lives, and they have this sense, I know I'm supposed to do something. They don't know what they're supposed to do, but it's inherent inside their heart that I'm supposed to do something.
Mm.
And so men realize we're supposed to do something. That doesn't mean we have any skills to do it.
Yeah.
But we know we're supposed to do something.
Yeah. Now, the subtitle of your book is The Adventure of Living in God's Plan. And
yeah.
I want to talk about some of the 10 best decisions a man can make. But before we even get into that, I want to ask you about some of the things that hold a man back from making a decision about anything at all. And I even think of that Jack Benny joke where the thief says, your money or your life.
Right.
And then he waits, and the thief says, well? And Jack says, well, I'm thinking.
I'm thinking. Well, I think there's a number of things that hold men back. One of them often is just they don't know what to do. Like, I like to tell guys all the time, I live in an area where there's a number of military bases, and one of those bases is where they do Top Gun training. And once a year, they open up the tarmac, and they put planes on display. And I tell guys, if I took you down there to this sophisticated jet, and I put you in the cockpit, and I told you, you need to fly this jet. Well, if you don't have any skill or any training or any experience flying it, you're going to be overwhelmed immediately. And you're either going to shut down on me or you're going to get angry. But if you've been through the training and you have the skill, you get to go for the ride of your life.
Mm.
And a lot of times that's the way it is for men, is that you know, we have this big life in front of us, but we don't know how to do it. So we just get overwhelmed. And we either go passive or we get angry at the people around us. So part of it is just we have to develop the skill in our life to be able to do what's in front of us.
Well, I don't think men want to ever look inadequate.
No, there's no doubt. Like, if men are success creatures. And if we can't succeed at something, we will ignore it. And
yeah.
We'll go do something else.
Yeah, or we'll diminish what it is. Or we'll completely neglect it because we don't want to look incompetent.
Right.
And that's just so painful.
Yeah.
I don't know. What is that about our psyches that do that? I mean, that's crazy.
We can talk about the question all we want, but the bottom line, it's an issue of pride in our lives.
Totally is, isn't it?
Yeah, we just don't want to look bad. And rather than admitting that and saying, hey, we need help. Like, we need mentors. Like, I know for me, one of the scariest things I ever did in my life was I asked a guy to mentor me. And the reason why it was so scary is that my dad was not a guy that engaged. In fact, I can remember like it was yesterday. I asked my dad one day, hey, Dad, how do you figure out what kind of a career you should pursue? Because my dad loved his career. So I figured if anybody knows, it's this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And his response to me was, well, I'm not very good at talking about this, but whatever you decide, I'll support. And my first thought was, that's not even true. Because I came back and told my dad, hey, Dad, you know, there's pretty good money in dealing drugs. What do you think? My dad would have erupted because I knew he wouldn't approve of that.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad could not put in words what he had done in his life.
Mm.
And I thought for a long time, that's just what guys do. So, like, going to a mentor is not going to do any good because they're just going to bail on you. And so when I finally worked up the courage to ask a man who was about my dad's age if he would teach me some stuff about life, I was sure he was going to say, no, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And as men, we just don't like – we don't like the rejection. We don't like being told that we can't. And we don't like that sense of being isolated. And so we just ignore the issue and try to figure it out on our own.
We kind of sound like big babies.
Well, you know, do you know Jay LaFoon?
I don't.
Okay, Jay's he and his wife are marriage educators, and he's just one of these like ridiculously talented guys that can sing and tell jokes and do teaching. And he describes us all of us men are 8-year-olds who shave. And there's some truth there.
Yeah.
And I think too, you know, we've always talked about women being more emotional than men.
No.
And that's not actually true.
No.
Women are just more expressive than men.
Yeah, you're emotional when you're shaving your back. You're going, oh, I don't want to be doing this.
And studies show that when men, the things that men feel about, they actually feel at a deeper level than females do.
That I believe.
We get overwhelmed by the emotions, and we feel like we're drowning because we're getting emotionally flooded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we just turn into big babies, and we say, well, we're just not dealing with it, and we run away.
Yeah, but were we ever that good at processing our feelings, or were we just kind of told feelings are not something you have? You know, get back in the game.
Well, I think it's both, Bill. I think in one sense we're not as good at it because they hit us so hard and so fast that we get overwhelmed by them. And then we train young men that you just need to get in there.
Yeah, totally.
Get over it and, buck up, man up.
All right, Bill, my friend, we're going to take a very short break. And when we come back, we're digging into the 10 best decisions a man can make. We're going to talk about it, brother.
Okay.
You with me?
Good.
You with me on this?
I'm with you.
All right. We're just going to live the promise with Susie Larson, but she's not here today. It's Bill Arnold sitting in. Hang with us. We'll be back in just a minute.
No matter the bumps, no matter the bruises, no matter the scars, still the truth is the cross has made, the cross has made you flawless.
My dad, oh man, he's awesome, but he actually didn't go to college and he just started working right away. And he did a few jobs for a while, but they were never really his passion. And so a few years ago, he decided to pursue his passion. And so now he's working at Minnesota Teen Challenge. And so it's really inspiring to just watch him doing some really awesome things there.
Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold sitting in today for Susie Larson. And we're talking to Bill Farrell today. He's written a book called The 10 Best Decisions a Man Can Make, The Adventure of Living in God's Plan. Bill, I want to start with, let's start with number one, decide to be decisive.
Yeah.
All right, this interview is over. I'm going to decide right now.
Yeah. So there, you made a decision and we're moving on, right?
Yeah, I was... I heard Tim Keller talk about when he planted the church in Manhattan, and everybody said to him, oh, you must have really gotten a word from the Lord that you were going to go do this. And he said, no, I saw a need. I didn't really hear a strong confirmation. I just saw that there was a need. So I went to New York, and I thought, well, if I fail, God will be teaching me something.
Yeah.
And I just, I love the decisiveness of that statement.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a big undertaking, yet he did it and was going to just decide to do it.
Well, And like that kind of sums up the importance of for us men being good decision makers. There's two things that really got my attention. One is when I realized that our emotions follow our decisions. So people who are not good decision makers tend to live in emotional turmoil. And I think the illustration of that is in a very famous Bible verse, Joshua 24:15. Almost everybody's quoted half the verse. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Like we love that.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, Joshua calls all the men of Israel together and says, okay, you need to make a decision. Choose you this day whom you will serve. And the decision is intellectually ridiculous because the decision is between the living God who created everything or a lifeless idol. And if you ask anybody today, what makes more sense, to serve the living God who created the earth or to serve an inanimate object? Intellectually, it's an easy decision, but the actual decision changes your emotional attachment to life and makes all the difference in the direction of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so making decisions, it's one of life's great ventures, but I find most people have no idea how to do that. Like if you ask the average person, do you have a process or a plan you go through when you're faced with a decision, the average person will say, no. And most of us are making decisions accidentally. Which sometimes turns out well, because some people's lives accidentally turn out really well, and other people's lives accidentally turn out really poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, if being a decision maker is so important, there must be a better way to do it than just doing it by accident.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to thinking about all I'd learned and kind of what I go through, and I put it together in a series of tests that we can apply to any decision you're faced with so that you can have confidence that you're making good decisions.
Okay.
And the first test, and these are progressive, so you start with the first one and you move to the next. So the first one is what I call the obvious test. And the obvious test is just one question. And that is this decision so obvious I'm wasting time thinking about it? Because I'm amazed at how many people do that. You know, there are some things we ought to do just because they make sense. Like if I were to ask you, should you brush your teeth every day? You shouldn't have to think about that one.
Well, I am thinking about it, though.
And if you spend too much time thinking about that, you start wasting energy and wasting time, and then pretty soon you're in debates about it, and you're asking everybody over dinner, and now something that should have been simple has turned into something very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And the other area where we do, which I'm fascinated with your last guest because of this, the other area where we waste a lot of decision-making time is in areas that God has already spoken. And so when you ask questions like, should you be involved in a community of believers? Well, God's already spoken on that.
Right.
Should you read your Bible on a regular basis? God's already spoken on that.
Right.
Should you marry somebody who has a similar faith to what you have? God's already spoken on that.
Right.
And when we start arguing those areas and start wondering, should I really do this and God's already spoken, now we're starting to waste energy in our life, and it causes our skill level to go down.
Hmm. I don't know if I would have connected those dots, but that's a very interesting comment. I'm gonna have to think about that one a little bit. I'm gonna put some notes on my pillow tonight and think about that.
That's good.
Let's talk about the adventure. I know that's something else. You decide to seek an adventure, and I don't know what that means. I want to know what it means.
The point of that is that I am convinced that the normal way that God works in a man's life is he calls us to something bigger than ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That the way men are wired, because we're used to being strong, and because we have strong muscles and we tend to have natural confidence, we will do things on our own until we're in a situation where we have to rely on God.
give me an example, because I think you're spot on about that one.
Well, in my career, I will set goals for myself that I know I can reach with my own skill,
mm-hmm.
and talk about it like it's something God called me to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's when I set goals that I couldn't possibly do on my own. Like if God doesn't show up and do something, this next goal is not possible.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I'm required to say, God, you got to show up, because if it's all up to me, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the resources. I don't have the time. I don't have the ingenuity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think God just normally works that way in men's lives. Like if you go back in the Bible, Abraham gets called out to just move his family and leave his business, leave his family, leave his hometown. And all God says is, I'm going to take you to a land that I'll show you.
Yeah, and he left with his golf clubs, I think. So
Yeah. and it's interesting, the one thing that God asked Abraham to do was go home and tell his wife. Which would have been very challenging.
I would have loved to hear that conversation.
Oh, can you imagine?
Yeah.
And then the other one that really sticks out to me is the feeding of the 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Because the disciples noticed everybody was hungry, so they went to Jesus and said, Jesus, send them out to go get something to eat. And Jesus looked them in the eyes and said, you guys feed them. And now they're challenged for something way bigger than themselves. Like they mm-hmm. have no idea how they're going to feed all these people. They went and found every resource they could find and came back to Jesus with the equivalent of two lunches. And they said, well, God, here's what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus said, I can work with that.
Wow.
And that's the kind of thing that God wants men doing, is living something that's bigger than themselves so that they have to cry out to God for help.
Yeah. If you're not bored with what you can do on your own, you're not thinking big enough.
Yeah. And what happens to men who don't have a big enough idea is they either get bored or angry. And men who are bored get involved in ridiculous behaviors. Like I'm convinced the reason why pornography and lust and wandering from our marriages and doing ridiculous behaviors is so prevalent today is too many men are bored.
I couldn't agree more.
They don't have a challenge in their life.
They're so quick to medicate.
Yeah.
because there's something that's missing and they're not engaged and they're not doing something that's way beyond their own ability.
Yeah, and without the big idea, the passion still rolls. Because God made all of us with this deep passion in our soul.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't have something worthwhile to apply that passion to, we'll go find something else.
Yeah, it's like just filling in for Susie Larson. You want to do something way above, you know, like if God doesn't show up, there's a lot of trouble going on here. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I just think it's the normal way God works. Like if you read the Bible and look for that, it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gideon gets called into battle, but first thing God says to him is, well, you have too many men. So from 32,000 to go down to 10,000, he says, oh, still too many, and drops him down to 300 with no weapons. And now God says, we're ready for battle.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. And yet it's the greatest story he ever got to tell because God showed up, and it's this big adventure that he's on.
Uh-huh.
And so I think men are at their best when they're doing something bigger than themselves, and it creates natural humility.
Yeah, I think it just brings out the best in men. I think it's when I feel the most amount of excitement is I think when I'm just up on the wire and there's no net.
Yeah.
And I love it and I hate it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it has to be driven out of us because I think it's there naturally.
Mm-hmm. Are you a thrill seeker, Bill? I mean, do you like to do stuff where you could potentially die?
To an extent, like I don't have the same thing my middle son has.
Okay.
Like my middle son is all over all that stuff.
Yeah.
I have a hard stuff with things that are pointless.
Okay.
So if it's a big adventure, it's got a point to it. I love it.
Okay. Now
if it's like, you know, going to heights just to go to heights, I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah. We just have a couple of minutes before the break, but I want to go to the idea of what you just said and how competitiveness is an important thing in the hearts and minds of men and what that should look like.
Well, again, life's competitive. If you read the Bible, it doesn't take you long to realize we're in a spiritual battle, and the point of being in the spiritual battle is to win. And 1 Corinthians 9:24 very clearly says, you know, don't you know that everybody who runs in a race all runs, but only one receives the prize. Run in such a way as you may win the prize. So we're competing in this world for spiritual health. We're competing in this world for the influence in our families. We're competing for truth and holding it up as the truth in life. And so there's an appropriate way to be competitive in life that is part of being a man. Now, if we get mean-spirited about it and we're just trying to ruin people with competition, that's a different discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're talking about competing for the health of our families and competing for the opportunities in our careers and competing for the hearts of men and women and competing for the truth being upheld in our world, those are all competitive pursuits.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go after things that are big, you run into competition.
Yeah.
If you want to do nothing in life, nobody will stop you and nobody will oppose you.
So do you have little competitions around your house all the time with your kids?
Oh, yeah. My family is all about athletics.
Okay.
And so when we get together, there's always something that we're competing about.
Okay.
It can be a board game. It can be who gets to the top of the hill first.
Mm-hmm.
I took my kids last year zip lining.
Oh, fun.
Out in the jungle.
Yeah.
And my youngest son did a backflip in his harness while he was coming down the line.
Yeah.
So, of course, everybody had to try it because we couldn't let the little one win.
I would have put him up for adoption. That's crazy behavior. Bill, we're going to take a short break. If you want to give the studio a call, 1-877-933-2484. If you have a question for Bill Farrell, we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold sitting in today for Susie Larson. Thanks for being with us.
Joining the National Guard, needed it to pay for college.
It'd probably be going to college, just getting the experiences, meeting people, and then also getting practical experience for the future.
Going to college and saying I want to get a college degree and pursue my passion for communication. So that was a big decision.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold sitting in today for Susie. Thanks for listening today. I have Bill Farrell on the studio line, and he has written a book called The 10 Best Decisions a Man Can Make. We're having a very fun conversation. Bill, one of the things you have is on your list is decide to set goals.
And yes.
I always think of Mike Tyson, who says, you know, everybody has a plan, and then you get punched in the mouth. And I always love that quote because I just think it's so true. And, you know, one of the goals I set was to read your book, and I got through most of it, you know.
Right.
I plan to read the rest of it. But it's goal setting can be kind of intimidating, can it?
Well, it can if you think you need to know the future.
Okay.
Because I think that's where, you know, people talk about goal setting like you're supposed to be God himself. Like, I know what's going to happen 20 years from now, so it's up to me to set the goals that are going to get me where I'm supposed to be.
Isn't that what goals are about, though?
And that's never been the it's never been the purpose of goals.
All right.
The purpose of goals is just to keep us in motion, because none of us know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would have told you, if you had met me in my 20s, and you had said to me, Bill, you're going to be an author, I would have laughed you out of the building because I wasn't all that fond of books. I was very strategic with books. I would only read the books I had to read.
Mm-hmm.
I would never read a book just for fun. And I never envisioned myself writing a book. But that's because at that time in my life, I couldn't see how it fit into the plan, and I hadn't developed the maturity in that skill to think it was attractive. But I wasn't required to know all that back then. All I had to do was stay in motion. And I think the key verse in the Bible for setting goals is Proverbs 16:9, which says, in his heart, a man plans his course,
mm-hmm.
but the Lord directs his steps.
Mm-hmm.
So a big part of being a man is we make plans. Like, we're supposed to ask, what am I good at? What would I like to do in life? What do I think is the best course of action for me?
Mm-hmm.
And we should get after it.
Yeah. Now, are you talking primarily about work, occupation, or is this also going into relationships as well?
Yeah. This is about how you take care of your physical body, what you do with financial investments, the family that you want to have in your life, the mm-hmm. ministry impact you want to have on others, and your career.
So financial investments like money in mayonnaise jars under my bed, is that stupid?
If it keeps you in motion, it's okay. Like, again, I think we put way too much pressure on ourselves in this area.
Okay.
Like, God's big enough to get us where he wants us to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the perfect example of that's Jonah. Jonah had no intention of going where God wanted him to be,
mm-hmm.
but he stayed in motion. And it was a hard ride, but God got him where he needed to go. And if we're smart about setting goals, we get there easier.
Mm-hmm.
If we're setting goals and we're not that skilled, I believe God will still get us there. It's just a harder road. And so our job as people is just to stay in motion.
Okay. Now, Bill, I'm going to ask you the difference between staying in motion
uh-huh.
and deciding to be busy. Because I think busy is a buzzword that doesn't mean anything anymore.
Sure.
How are you doing? I'm busy. Well, yeah, who isn't?
Right.
You know, you're boring me right now.
Right.
I mean, you're not boring me.
But no, I get it.
When people say that, I go, well, of course you're busy.
Yeah.
But one of your things is decide to be busy.
Sure, and it's based on the fact that if you're gonna have worthwhile goals, and the difference between having goals and being busy is goals have a purpose. You know, if I say that my goal is to be able to play with my grandkids at full speed when they're 18 years old,
mm-hmm.
which means I need to weigh a certain weight, I need to have a certain activity level, I need to eat a certain way. That's got purpose to it. If my goal is just I just want to stay in shape, I'm just gonna be busy working out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I'm just busy. I don't really have a reason for it. I'm just busy mm-hmm. doing what I think I'm supposed to do. So goals always have a purpose to them.
But we can also hide behind busy, can't we?
Of course we can.
We can make busy a shield that says, stay away from me. I'm busy. I'm not connecting with people.
Yeah.
I'm going to actually look at my iPhone all night.
Right. And again, we have lots of ways of hiding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys are good at disappearing into the forest, spending more time fishing than they should, more time with technology than they should, and then they declare themselves busy.
Mm-hmm.
But God didn't put us on earth just to be busy. He put us here to be purposeful.
Right.
And so if we have worthwhile goals, it keeps us in motion. And then God can steer us where he wants us to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just confident that if we will stay, we'll just stay moving forward.
Yeah.
And whatever God's put on your heart, there's a certain pace that fits whatever God's called you to do.
Mm-hmm. My friend, Dr. Glenn Pickering, who's a guest on the show occasionally, will say this. He says, life's most dangerous question is, what do you want?
Well, that's really good.
I know.
That's really good.
But we're talking about how busy we all are and how we need to stay in motion. And then on the other side of the coin is the whole idea that, when do we rest? When do we actually disconnect? One year I made a little vow that I would not do anything electronic on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And it lasted till March. So I thought, not bad, Bill, not bad.
Right.
I did so well, but I didn't do the internet and I didn't, you know, nothing electronic. And I was, right, you know, really miserable for 3 months. but when is it the right time for a man to stop and have Sabbath rest? Let's talk about that as well.
Well, first of all, in principle, let's agree that it's important.
Oh, no doubt.
No man can go 24/7 and not either physically or relationally hurt himself by being overcommitted.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, what rest does, the goal of rest is to rejuvenate us and kind of reset our priorities. And I would say every man that I know has a different balance in how they accomplish that. And let me just share a quick story. I was at a pastor's conference that Howard Hendricks was a keynote speaker at. And, you know, 20 years ago, Howard Hendricks was that guy that was everywhere.
Right.
He was teaching seminaries, writing books, doing conferences on the radio. And if you were in ministry, you knew about Howard Hendricks.
Mm-hmm.
And so we asked him at a question and answer session, Prof, how do you do all the stuff that you're doing? And we all got our pens out waiting for the big, you know, profound answer. And what he told us was, I recover quickly. Mm. He said, if I take a day off and get a good night's sleep, I'm kind of back in motion, ready to go.
Mm.
And so his ability to recover is higher than the average person. And I have found that men who are just deliberate about it, like I actually put in my calendar when I'm going to rest. I don't let it just be, oh, I feel tired, now I'm going to rest.
Mm-hmm.
I actually make appointments with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think men ought to do that.
Yeah.
We got to figure out how much time we need to recuperate and to get our priorities reset. And it should be in our calendars.
Yeah. Are you a type A guy, Bill? I mean, you sound like you could be, like you're the kind of guy who might try to pass me inside a car wash.
I'm actually not.
Okay.
But the way I would describe myself is I'm a desperately aggressive introvert.
I love that. I love that.
Because if I hadn't grown up in the family I grew up in, I probably would be very relaxed,
uh-huh,
very easygoing.
Mm-hmm.
But I grew up in a crazy home, and it turned something on inside of me that said, this life drives me crazy,
mm-hmm,
and there's too much pain in this life that I grew up in, so I've got to find something different.
So it was a real motivator.
It was a real motivator.
Uh-huh.
By nature, I'm an introvert, and I'm a team guy. Like, okay, I would want us to win together rather than me beat you.
Okay. Yeah. I really love that, because I didn't get that impression from reading your book when I thought, this guy's got a real strong competitive edge, and I love what you just said, because it's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, and for me, competition's a team sport.
Oh, I agree. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big we thing for me, and that's where I raised my kids, and they all – it's interesting. All of my kids played team sports.
Nice. All right, this next question I have for you, we could have spent the whole hour on, and that is focus – in chapter 6, it focuses on deciding to be better.
Yeah.
That is a gigantic statement. Please help sort through this one.
Well, 2 Peter 3:18 has always been a captivating verse for me that says, grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And I have seen that when I just stay in process, so like one of my goals in life is to be better a year from now than I am today. And I have found that to be a much better goal than trying to get it all right or trying to be perfect. And guys who try to get it all right tend to get frustrated. And they get to a point where they say, you know what, I can't even do this. I can't accomplish this. I can't make it happen. And so then they go the other way and they start to sabotage their life.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal of life isn't to be perfect. The goal of life is to be just better a year from now than we are today, and better 2 years from now than we are a year from now. And I like to tell people that perfection is really not a good goal, because if you ever accomplished it, we would crucify you.
Totally.
And so the whole idea is to just stay in process. Just keep getting better intellectually, keep getting better spiritually, keep getting better in your relationships, keep getting better in your self-awareness. And as you stay in progress, you'll be amazed at how much you accomplish in your life just because you're getting better.
Do you think that there's a lot of people that live in a black and white world, and that's part of the problem? It's either I need to do this really, really well and be perfect at it, or forget it, it's just not going to work. And you can't do that. You got to live in gray area where you're trying to get better. Am I onto something with that?
I think what you just described is the common approach to life. That people just have this sense, and like I saw it when I was pastoring. I spent 15 years as a lead pastor, and it was fascinating to me that the two things that we all did. First of all, we all compared ourselves to the huge ministries. So if our ministry wasn't like that guy's, we haven't arrived yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing we all did is when we got together at conferences, the first question everybody asked each other is, how big is your church? Because we're living with that pressure of, I got to get it right, I got to be the best, I got to be spectacular, and if I don't, then nothing counts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're killing ourselves with that.
Well, how many churches are suffering today at the hands of a pastor with too big of an ego?
Well, it's there's so many of them that you can't count anymore.
Really?
Like Pam and I, we have a picture frame on our desk in our office, and it's a nice picture on the front, but behind that picture are clippings from newspapers and magazines about pastors who have not watched over their own life and have had some type of a wipeout that ruined their ministry. And it's just sitting there as a reminder to us that if we don't just stay in the process of growth, that could be us.
Mm.
And I don't ever want that to be my story.
No, I love it. No, I don't want it to be my story either. Well,
yeah.
Bill, we're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, we're going to have another segment with you. If you have a caller, is there a call for Bill? You can certainly get it in the last 15 minutes. Give us a call at 1-877-933-2484. Listening to Live the Promise with Susie Larson, but she's not here today. This is Bill Arnold sitting in for her. We'll be back in just a minute.
Say that my dad has always been an example of choosing his family first. Above work, above hobby, above pleasure, and because of that, I as his daughter have grown up feeling safe and secure.
Welcome back to Live the Promise. Thanks for being with us today. 4:47, and it's still some nice warm sunlight out there, so I am grateful. I'm going to make a decision right now that is a good thing. We're talking today to Bill Farrell. He's written a book called The 10 Best Decisions a Man Can Make, The Adventure of Living in God's Plan. Bill, I've another question here for you,
mm-hmm.
and that is deciding to be a friend of God. That's a tough one for guys to, I think, get their arms around.
Yeah, because we tend to approach God as if there's an authority structure, that he's in charge and we're not, and we're just following him, and he gives out assignments and we go do them, and that's just, you know, we kind of say yes sir and we move on.
Yeah, it feels like he's an angry boss.
Yeah, but Jesus himself described himself as a friend of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to his disciples, I'm going to call you friends. And as men, it helps us a lot, because men aren't terribly great at friendship. We tend to kind of size ourselves up next to each other, and we do more bantering than we do sharing, and
mm-hmm.
we like to challenge each other rather than encourage one another, and there's certainly room for all of that, but most men are very uncomfortable with the idea of friendship. Like, you ask the average guy who his really great friends are, and most of them don't have one.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a group of two or three guys in their life that they're just really great friends. And it robs us of an understanding of the kind of relationship Jesus wants to have with us. Like Jesus, one of the things that amazes me is that Jesus wants to hear from us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become more amazing to me as I've become a parent and now a granddad.
Mm-hmm.
Like when my grandkids show up right now at my house, half the time they don't even make sense, but I'd love to hear their voice. And they try to instruct me on things that I'm way ahead of them on, but I never interrupt them because I just love to see the look in their eyes and I love to hear their voice.
Mm.
And I realize, you know what? God's the same way, that he wants us to talk to him. He wants to hear what we have to say. He even wants us to try to give him advice and explain things in life to him,
mm-hmm.
not because he needs it from us, but because he loves to hear our voice.
Wow. I love that.
As men capture that idea that, you know what, I've got a friend in God. I don't just have a boss.
Mm.
I have a friend. Like, he likes the same hobbies that I like. He likes the same people that I like. He's loyal to me and will always have my back. And I believe that's what evangelism is. Evangelism is us having God's back.
Mm-hmm.
That because we live in a world that's opposed to him, we stand for him, not because we have to, but because he's our friend. And just like we would stand for other friends in our life and we would protect them, we do the same thing. That's why we have apologetics in this world. That's why we teach God's word and why we share the gospel with others, because we're defending our friend
yeah.
and other people. And we're trying to open up a relationship between our friend and other friends.
Mm. Yeah,
and it changes the whole dynamic of how you view this interactive relationship we have with him.
Yeah, I always try to tell my friends that I'll always be there for them as long as it doesn't involve time or money. So I'm trying to be a better friend.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but those moments that have been like great friend moments,
yeah.
I just never forget.
Yeah, like, you never do you?
Yeah, like there's an event that took place over in Germany when I had an opportunity to go over there. And a friend of ours hosted us over there. So I show up at the friend's house, and there's a Mini Cooper sitting in the driveway. So over dinner, I said to them, I said, hey, you know, the Autobahn's not far from here. When are we going out in that Cooper? And his 18-year-old son said, well, I'll take you out. And, you know, as a man, once you're committed to something, you can't,
right.
you can't weasel out. So
right.
I'm like, well, this may not be very smart having an 18-year-old
right.
drive me on the Autobahn, but we're going.
Yeah.
And as we're leaving the house, he says to his son, hey, no going over 130 miles an hour.
Oh, my.
I'm thinking, God, I wish I could have said that to my boys once. Just
yeah,
once.
Yeah.
I wish I could have said that.
Where are your tough guy pants now, Billy?
So I can see like it was yesterday, cruising down the Autobahn, 130 miles an hour, and getting passed by two Porsches like we were standing still.
Yeah.
I have a Prius.
I have a Prius. I don't know what it's like to go over 60. So,
you just talk about gas mileage.
Yeah,
right?
I'm just talking about speed. No, gas mileage.
All
right, let's keep talking about the list because there's more to cover here. And one thing you say is decide to be a man of principle.
Yes.
And now, where are those principles going to come from, and how do we get them to become a part of our life reality?
Well, the best place to get principles of life is from the Bible. Now, it's not where everybody gets them from.
Mm-hmm.
Like my dad, I would describe my dad as a man of principle, even though he's not a man that reads God's word. But my dad has a sense of kind of a simple sense of integrity. Like when he said, I do at the altar, he just meant it. Like
mm-hmm.
for him, I just got to do that. You respect people. You work hard. You do what you said you would do. Those are principles he holds in his heart, even though he didn't get them directly from the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But all principles are decisions you have made in your soul that these things will guide my life, regardless of what the public is saying, regardless of how it turns out for me. These things are things I believe in, and so I will do them regardless of whether it moves me forward or whether it moves me backwards. In my career or in my finances, you can just count on me to do these.
Mm-hmm.
So things like I know in my life, being tenacious is a principle. I just believe in the world we live in, things don't come easy. And so you have to be willing to work, and you have to be willing to stay at things and just be tenacious about the things that are important to you.
Yeah, I read an article on the author James Patterson, and he said that, you know, he makes $90 million a year writing, and he said – the first 31 publishers rejected him.
Yeah.
And I always say to myself, you know, what am I doing to go get rejected today?
It's good.
Because if you're not getting rejected, what's the point? What are, you know, I'm talking about that tenacity you're talking about.
Yeah.
And tenacity means you're going to step up and you're going to ask for something. You're going to try to have something happen, and then there's a good chance you'll be rejected.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges of men today is we think things are supposed to come easy.
And, where'd that idea come from?
I don't know, but life's not that way. I'm amazed at how many men just think, oh, you know, I tried and it didn't work out, and so this must not be for me. And sometimes that's true, but a lot of times you didn't really try that hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you didn't really make a commitment to it. And Pam and I do a lot of work with married couples, and I'm amazed at how many married couples just say, oh, it's not worth it.
Mm.
You know, they made this big investment, like they're 20, 25 years into it, and then they decide to give up.
They're just too wounded, aren't they?
Yeah, or they're just not willing, you know, yeah. Like, well, communication's hard.
Yeah.
Like, yeah?
Yeah, and your point is?
And so I try to teach my boys that, like, it's just life takes tenacity, and you're going to face difficulties along the way, but that doesn't mean it's a bad thing.
Right.
Like in sports, the things you love in sports are the obstacles you overcome.
Totally.
You know, the games that are easy, you forget quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But the games that you had to stretch and you had to work and you had to focus and you had to compete together, you never forget those moments.
That's so true. Okay, Bill, talk a little bit about the decision to be a role model. I don't know if that's going to be comfortable for a lot of people to hear that. Do you really want to be a role model? Do you want to just do you want to stand out among others, or do you want to live quietly in the background?
And I would even go a little farther, Bill, and say most men are very uncomfortable with the idea of being a role model. And the reason why I put it in the book is it's true whether we want it to be or not. Like, no matter who you are out there, if you're a man, somebody's watching your life. And the reason why is God just built it into manhood. That is interesting, you know, the quotes that you shared. Everybody's talking about the inspiration their dad is and how much of an impact dad had in my life. And if you're a man, somebody's watching your life. And if you fight against it, it confuses people. If you embrace it, it becomes this really sweet thing in your life. Like, I just had a conversation with my dad. My dad's 85 years old, and my dad has a lot of physical struggles in his life, so he doesn't move well, he's not real mobile, and yet my dad is having the biggest impact he's ever had today in our family. And the reason why is he decided to start talking.
Hmm.
And I would tell you that when I was young and through my teen years, my dad didn't do a great job being a dad. He didn't know what to do. His dad died young. He just didn't know what to do. And so he spent a lot of time in the garage. And about 5 years ago, my dad decided to start talking. And he's been telling the family story. He's been talking about some of the mysteries of our family that we all wondered, like, what happened? He's starting to tell us. And he's talking about previous generations that have been a mystery to me because both my parents split with their families and I didn't interact with them when I was growing up. Well, now my dad's telling the story. And everybody in my family now hangs on every word my dad shares because he's finally decided to be a role model, even though we were all watching him anyway. Since he embraced it, we're now seeking him out and we're asking him lots of questions and we're getting him to talk.
Mm, that's fantastic.
And so when a man decides to do it, what used to be scary and awkward becomes a really sweet spot in his life because people are watching anyway.
Yeah. Bill, we have less than a minute to go. And if there's a person out there with a huge decision coming up and he's feeling paralyzed, do you have a 30-second word of encouragement for him?
I mean, forgive me for doing this, Bill, but I would encourage him to get the book and work through the chapter on decision making because it's got a step-by-step process on how to unlock it. And I couldn't tell it all in 30 seconds.
No, I know.
But I would tell him it's a step-by-step process. Anybody can do it because it's really simple.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take the first step, the second step is easier. And when you take the second step, the third step is easier. And if you work through it systematically rather than thinking you have to feel what's right,
mm-hmm.
You'll get to a decision that you can have confidence in.
Well, that's been a great hour, Bill. I know you're a regular guest with Susie, and I know why. I didn't think I was going to like you, and I'm completely wrong. I was completely wrong. So I feel good.
Because it's hard to like bills that show up spontaneously,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. So I was proven wrong. But thanks for being on the show. We're going to put all that information linked to the program. If you want to get more information about Bill's book, you can do that on My Faith Radio on Susie's webpage. So check that out. Next Monday, I'll be back one more day with J. Warner Wallace and fitness expert Clark Bartram. So that'll be a great day. Thanks very much for listening. Good night. Have a great weekend.